It's my great honor and fortune and pleasure to be with all of you this evening. Thank you very much for being with us. Actually, Mr. Muffatlal, Mr. Desai, and these wonderful people, this film, they said certain things about me, but actually they've done everything. Have you ever seen a sporting event? Do you know what a cheerleader is? A cheerleader just stands on the sides and says, yes, yes, go, 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 and then the team does all the work. So I'm like a cheerleader. I just try to encourage, but it's the dedication and the incredible compassion of these people that have actually offered the world wonderful services. Real fulfillment can only take place in the heart. The body, the senses, the mind can have some flickering gratifications. But the Bhagavad Gita explains these flickering gratifications, the nature of it is the more you have, the more you need. Like fire. If you put fuel in fire, the fire gets hotter and bigger and hungrier. And that's the way wealth, power, prestige, sensual pleasures, that is the nature of all these things. They have a beginning, they have an end. They can give some gratification to the mind and senses, but they cannot touch the heart. It is said in a cultured society, people love people and use things. But unfortunately in this world, people love things. And they use people to get them and to keep them. That life is so shallow. It leaves us with an empty heart. My guru Srila Prabhupada gave an analogy of a lady who had a bird cage. And a neighbor came over and looked at the birdcage, and it was beautifully decorated. It was actually gilded with gold, and there was emeralds and diamonds and nice ribbons and silks decorating it. And she said, "See my birdcage." And the person looked and was horrified. The birdcage was fantastic, but the bird inside was dead due to starvation. Now, the purpose of a bird cage is to be a nice place for the bird. It's just kind of a simplistic analogy, but it's an analogy of our times. People are so concerned with what they have and what they wear and what their titles are, but the living force within us, the heart, is starving for actual, real fulfillment. I write about in this book that recently came out, The Journey Home, the time I spent with Mother Teresa in Calcutta in about 1971. And I remember she told me something very striking. She said, the greatest problem in this world is hunger. Not hunger of the stomach. There's a lot of that. The real problem is hunger of the heart. And because of that hunger of the heart, there's so much hunger of the stomachs too. She said there is only one nourishment that can satisfy the heart. And that is love. To love and to be loved. If somebody has everything else but not that, the heart is empty. And in that emptiness, we have to somehow or other divert our attention away from the loneliness and the pain and the futility of our life. And we try to fill it with all kinds of sensory entertainments and all kinds of accomplishments and all kinds of sometimes drugs and alcohol and just things to divert us from what's within. A rich life is when we find a treasure, when we find love within ourselves, and that naturally manifests as compassion toward others, and that's our actual motivation. Whether we're little swamis just traveling around without any real resources, or whether we're farmers or doctors or lawyers or teachers or politicians or millionaires or billionaires, they're all potentially wonderful if we have a right, a fulfilling motivation behind it. Meaningful life is a fulfilling life. When I was a teenager in America in the 1960s, I heard Martin Luther King speak this. If you do not have an ideal you're willing to die for, you have nothing very meaningful to live for. I wanted to find that ideal. And in my search, I hitchhiked all the way from London to the Himalayas in India. It took 6 months. And I found in India, people were trying to get visas to go to America. Usually not to find an ideal. But that's all right. If you have an ideal, then we can go to America and we can get so much. Or wherever. Lakshmi is the goddess of fortune. According to the sacred Vedic literatures, wealth is not Maya. Wealth is sacred. Wealth is spiritual. Wealth is divine. When it's used with compassion for a divine purpose. Otherwise, wealth is Maya. And poverty is also Maya. Is a knife good or bad? If a knife is used by a crook to kill somebody, a knife is negative. If a knife is used by a surgeon to heal somebody, a knife is something very, very positive. Everything. Our wealth, our intelligence, our abilities, our connections, everything is potentially either spiritual or material, either productive or destructive, according to the consciousness that the person has that is striving and utilizing it. In family life, the most fulfilling thing a person can do is leave a legacy for their children. A legacy that will bring fulfillment, a legacy that will bring values. And it's not what we give them that's going to make that definition. It's how we live. It's what we prioritize. It is our integrity and our character. I grew up in Chicago. I'd like to tell a story that I used to hear when I was a child in Chicago. And it actually struck me very hard, even then. May I share it with you? Exactly how literally correct everything, all the details in this story are, I cannot testify to. But as far as I know, it's a true story. And it affected my heart. In fact, I'm going to tell you two stories. First is the story of a man named Easy Eddie. Raise your hand if you have heard of Easy Eddie. He was one of the greatest attorneys or lawyers of the time. He was a criminal lawyer. And he had such a power that he could manipulate juries and manipulate the law and find loopholes that could practically get anybody out of any crime. And because he was so good, back in the 1920s and 30s, the Chicago Mafia hired him. Now, you may not have heard of Easy Eddie, but have you ever heard of Al Capone? Well, he was the main client for Easy Eddie. And he and these other gangsters, they were killing. They were having this business where you just go to these innocent shopkeepers and say, you pay us $200 a month as an insurance policy, and we'll make sure that nobody bombs your shop. But if you don't pay us this insurance policy, we will make sure someone does bomb your shop. And the whole city of Chicago lived in fear, because if they didn't live up to it, nobody's going to take it seriously. So these people, they're dying. There was prostitution. At that time, liquor was illegal in America. It was the Prohibition. And they were bootlegging, they were producing liquor and making huge amounts of money. And nobody could touch them. There was a television show when I was a boy. It was called The Untouchables. That's talking about the mafia. They were untouchable. And one of the reasons is they had Easy Eddie. Do you know how much they paid this man? He was so wealthy. He had an entire city block in downtown Chicago area that was his estate, and he owned it. And he had parks, and he had a beautiful mansion, and he had the best cars, and he had an airplane, and he had a yacht, and he could just go anywhere, anytime. He had everything. And he had a son, and he gave his son all this stuff. His son was flying airplanes, and his son was driving the best cars, and best clothes and best foods. But he started seeing his son was kind of becoming arrogant and taking things for granted, and he was wondering, what if I've given my son everything that a man could possibly give a family, but there's one thing I have not given my son. A father that he could be proud of. A father that lives with values, character, and integrity. And if I do not give my son that, I have failed as a father. He'll simply be spoiled with all the wealth and power and prestige I've given him. And he realized, the only way that he could give that pride in the values of his father to his son, is he, Easy Eddie, would have to testify against the mafia, which means he would be murdered. There was no doubt about it. But because he actually cared about his son, he loved his son. Love means to sacrifice for the person we love. He testified against the mafia. And along with his testimony, which opened the doors for so much other evidence to be come in and so many others, Al Capone and so many of the leaders of the mafia were sent to prison. And shortly after, he was driving a car, and another car pulled up to him with three machine guns and shot him dead instantly. He paid the ultimate price to give what he understood he had to give to his son. A legacy that his son could be proud of. A legacy of values that would actually make his son a great person. Now I'm going to tell another story. World War II. In the Pacific, America and Japan were having big battles at the sea. And there was a huge battleship called the USS Lexington that had several thousand soldiers, sailors, aircrafts on it. It was an aircraft carrier. And a group of about six or seven planes took off together to go and fight some battle at some distant place. And one of the pilots of one of the planes happened to look at his fuel gauge, and he saw that they forgot to put fuel in his plane. So he had to kind of speak to all the other planes, whatever way they communicated, and say, I have to go back. So they all kept going, and he turned around. He was going back to the battleship. What he saw on his way back shocked him to the core. He saw the USS Lexington was just sitting there going about their business like any other day, whatever they do, you know, just making everything happen. And there was a whole squadron of about a dozen Japanese bombers heading toward it to sink it. And he had no way to notify them. All he had to do was just kind of fly by, and he would have been safe. But you know what he did? He single-handedly went to fight against 12 bombers. This is an impossible feat. And they thought, this person's insane. This one plane, it just comes in, and they're going, 12 planes are shooting at him, and he's shooting at them. He actually caused about three or four of them to fall into the ocean. But then he ran out of bullets. So now what? They're shooting at him. He is nothing. He was so wild because he cared so much about all those thousands of people on that ship that were going to die if he didn't do something. He started flying at the planes and knocking their wings off. And they thought, this man's totally crazy. And there was about five planes left, and they just flew away because they just couldn't deal with this person. He was just crashing into them. He came back to the USS Lexington he had all these eyewitnesses that saw what he did. They were not prepared to fight. His plane was all beaten up, and it kind of like came somehow or other landed on the ship. He was the first person in World War II in the U.S. Air Force to win the highest honor of the U.S. Congressional Medal of Honor. Why? Because he was willing to sacrifice his life for the welfare of these others. Please listen carefully. What makes this story so important to me is this person. His name was Butch O'Hare. Have you ever heard of O'Hare Airport? O'Hare Airport was named after him for this greatest feat of bravery in Air Force history in America. Butch O'Hare was the son of Easy Eddie. That is the values that his father taught him. A much greater wealth than having a big house and having a big bank account and not knowing what in the world to do with it all. He knew what to do with his life because his father loved him, and he lived with the legacy of that love. From a spiritual perspective, the origin of love is the Atma's or the soul's love for Bhagavan, for God. It is our deepest inherent nature to love God and to be an instrument of God's love in whatever we do. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he spoke a beautiful verse. Nitya Siddha Krishna Prema Sajya Kabunoi Saravanadi Sudichiti Koriye Yudhoi. That love for Krishna, love for God, there's one God for all living beings, has many names, but that love for God or Krishna is within the heart of every living being. It's our nature. But has been forgotten because of the ahankar, the false ego. It's identifying with so many temporary designations. We're forgetting that we are Satchit Ananda. We are eternal, full of knowledge and full of bliss, and nothing could change that. One of my dearest God sisters, who was like a mother to me, she was on her deathbed in London, and I left for Mumbai to go to visit her. I happened by God's grace to come just the day before she passed away. And she was saying, she was a very, very independent, active, dynamic lady who loved to get things done and organize, and she was always caring about people. And here she was with cancer, paralyzed, crippled from the, crippled, emaciated. Her husband had to clean her excrement because she couldn't even move. And she said with a smile that even though I appear so helpless, she said, I have infinite relevance. I have infinite significance because Krishna loves me. And nothing could ever change that. Not disease, not even death. That's my greatest wealth, and that gives me such unlimited importance forever, that God loves me. And then she smiled and she said, but I have nothing to be proud of over anyone else, because God loves everybody. To experience God's love and to actually understand our own love for God is the greatest wealth. And it's within us. It simply has to be awakened. And that's what religion, that's what spirituality, that's what yoga, that's what true human culture is meant to do. Awaken the divinity that is within us. And to be an instrument of that divinity. When you water the root of the tree, the water naturally extends to every leaf, every branch, every twig, every flower of that tree. And similarly, aham sarvasya pravavo matta sarvam pravartate. Krishna tells in the Gita, I am the source of all material and spiritual worlds. Everything emanates from me. The Brahma Sutra tells janmadyasya yataha, the absolute truth is from whom everything emanates. In other words, the root. When we water the root of the tree of our heart, when we actually connect with God's love, and when our love reaches that place, it naturally extends to every living being. We no longer see male, female, black, white, red, yellow, brown. We don't no longer see simply rich or poor, or Eastern or Western. We don't even necessarily see human or dog or cat or elephant or cow. We see that wherever there is life, it is sacred. If we understand the sacredness of our life, we will recognize it wherever there is life. But if we are too dull and forgetful to see the sacredness of our own eternal, beautiful existence, we can't recognize it in others. We just become either attracted or averse to all these external things. Real knowledge, according to the Gita, is the ability to see all living beings with equal vision. And that is our natural state. When we connect, when we access that love within our heart, when we tune in to that divinity, then we will naturally feel genuine compassion for others. And then our fulfillment in life is not just in what we can get, but what we could give. And actually, in that state, the more we get with proper character, the more we actually have to give. Some people think if a person becomes spiritual, they become demotivated. But it's just the opposite. A mother's love for a child, what profits is she getting from it? But yet, I'm a Swami. I never had a child. I never had a wife. But I like to watch people. That's kind of the way my life has been, just observing and learning and trying to get messages I can share. I have nothing else to do, actually. A mother, the father will come after 8 or 9 or 10 hours working, watch television, and go to sleep, or whatever else they do. But the mother is 24 hours a day in service, especially little babies. You know, all of a sudden they cry. I give classes upstairs, and then little baby, and the mother's the least expected moment, babies need you. What is the motivation that she has to stay up all night when the baby's sick all day? I know mothers, they haven't slept in days and days because of difficulties that their children are having. It's love. A business person, a politician, an educator, a mother, a father, whatever we may be, if we're motivated with compassion, if we see all the needs of this world, all the suffering, and we understand from our heart, we're all one family, we're all God's children, we will be so motivated to make a difference through our character, our integrity, and our efforts. I'd like to end with one little story. Actually, I'm going to tell two things. First, the story. Last year, I went to a redwood forest in California. And there was these massive redwood trees. Some of them are 2,000 years old. Others are 1,000 years old, hundreds and hundreds of years old. They're the tallest trees in the world. They're the biggest trees in the world. And they're some of the oldest trees in the world. And I was walking with a friend, and we happened to come across a group of Chinese tourists. They had their cameras, and they were all in a circle around the forest ranger. Do you like the story so far? The forest ranger was teaching the underground secret of the redwood trees. Now, I'm from the counterculture of the 1960s in America, so I've always been attracted to underground secrets. So I stopped, and I said to my friend, let's listen to this. And the forest ranger, I never thought I would hear a Bhagavad Gita class from a forest ranger. It was actually... he didn't know what Bhagavad Gita is, but he was speaking the message of the Bhagavad Gita by just explaining the nature of the redwood trees. First thing is, you're with me so far? It's very important, actually. He explained that in order for a tree to grow tall, the roots must go deep. Because the roots are like a foundation. Like in your house, if you don't have a strong foundation, when a storm comes, it's going to crumble. But nobody sees your foundation. People might say when you're building a house, why waste time with the foundation? Nobody's going to see it. Just make everything else nice. But it's necessary. So with a tree, the roots is what keeps it alive. It's where the life comes from. He said the redwood trees are the tallest trees in the world and the biggest trees in the world, and the roots do not grow deep. And then he explained how here in Northern California, there has been massive destructive earthquakes. There has been incredible snowstorms, windstorms, hurricanes. How is it that these redwood trees in loose soil, on hilly terrain, are growing higher and higher and higher for several thousand years through the earthquakes and the storms if their roots are not deep. He told that the redwood trees, their roots, they grow outward. Underground, they grow out. And they specially grow seeking the roots of other redwood trees. One redwood tree is going this way, another this way. When their roots meet, they intertwine and make a permanent lock with each of their roots. That's on one side. On the other side, there's so many other redwood trees, and it's going and locking the roots with. I even started looking at some roots that were over the ground, and they were locked, unbreakable. Essentially, every tree in the forest is interconnected with every other tree, directly or indirectly. This is like their networking. And the little tiny baby redwood trees, just when they start growing, the big ancient giants come with their roots and wrap around their little baby roots to make the little redwood tree almost indestructible. And it grows and it grows. And as they help each other, they all become strong. And in this way, they live to be the oldest trees on the planet. And they grow higher and higher and higher through all the storms and earthquakes of life. You see, our roots as human beings are our affection, our love, our compassion to each other. When the roots of our hearts are interconnected, that's what gives us individual and collective strength and power. As they say, united we stand, divided we fall. And what I got from the story is a beautiful illustration of Mother Nature that teaches us the concept of seva. In love, in compassion, in service to others, we gain the greatest strength, stability, and fulfillment within. Human beings are meant to live in this spirit. Real leadership is to inspire these values of seva, of service from the heart, with compassion, due to the realizations that we have found in our life. And I'll end with one little statement. Earlier this year, I was invited to the House of Lords in London. And that was a very, what am I doing in the House of Lords? I was remembering that 43 years before, I was sitting on the riverbank of the River Thames, completely confused about where I was going in life or where the river of destiny was going to leave me. And now I'm giving a lecture just across the river in the Parliament. But I spoke so many things. But I got a loud ovation when I said one sentence. And it really moved me, because I thought this is just a sentence that's common sense for everyone. Ajay, you were there. And Srinathji, Dr. Desai, you were there. It was a beautiful event, actually. The green room or something like that, but the statement that they applauded, the because these are lords and ladies and princesses, and there were dukes and duchesses and very big entrepreneurs and entertainers from the Westminster area, and there were members of parliament. Very affluent people. But they applauded, and afterward, dozens of people came to me and said that this one sentence has completely transformed their way of looking at life. May I share it with you? It's very simple. I happen to say that you can tell how rich you are by trying to find out how many things you have that money cannot buy. That's love. Money can buy a lot of things, but it can never buy love. Only love can buy love. That is the greatest inheritance that we all have, to find that and to share that in the world, is the leadership that we're all crying for. Thank you very much.